You are listening to From Embers, a weekly show on CFRC 101.9 FM about anarchist and anti-authoritarian ideas and practice. We are broadcasting from the traditional territory of the Anishinaabe and Haudenosaunee peoples on land that has come to be called Kingston, Ontario, Canada, because of the thievery and brutality of the Canadian state and its empire-loving parents. From Embers is about fires, some real and some metaphorical. Fires started generations ago and tended to over the years. Little sparks all across this territory that we hope will grow, spread, and engulf the thieving state called Canada and the capitalist system that has plagued this land since the fur trade.
So you've probably heard by now about the so-called Freedom Convoy, or Operation Bear Hug, or the Flu Trucks Clan, depending who you ask. This refers to a series of disruptive actions over the past couple weeks that were spearheaded by right-wing groups across Canada opposed to public health measures related to the pandemic, such as vaccine mandates, masking, and restrictions for businesses. And groups such as the Canadian Anti-Hate Network have been doing a pretty good job of exposing the significant number of white supremacists and nationalist separatists who are involved in organizing and funding the convoy. So rather than catalog it all here, I'm just going to encourage you to go to antihate.ca if you want to see in-depth articles detailing all of these nefarious connections going on behind the scenes. But the current epicenter of the action is an occupation of downtown Ottawa that is anchored by several hundred semi-trucks who drove across the country picking up people along the way and are now clogging the streets around Parliament Hill, sounding their horns around the clock and gathering large crowds on the weekends for big street parties. Like-minded groups across the country have also targeted provincial legislatures and significantly border crossings to ratchet up the pressure. This is a very fluid situation, and by the time you listen to this episode, a lot could have changed and probably has. This interview was recorded on the weekend of February 5th, just as the city of Ottawa has declared a state of emergency and Ottawa police were adopting a new and aggressive posture, promising to disrupt the occupiers' fuel deliveries and start making arrests. On this episode, you're going to hear my conversation with Dan, who is a transportation worker based outside of Toronto, who I asked to help unpack the situation a bit through the lens of somebody who works with a lot of truckers and is a shop steward for a local of the Teamsters Union. We discuss the recent history of the far-right patriot movement in Canada, how it has evolved and adapted to the pandemic up until this point, what it's been like at his workplace, and some ideas about how anarchists might engage and or confront this large-scale action playing out on the highways and cities across the country.
I mean, so my name is Dan. Live in a city just outside of Toronto. I'm a delivery driver for like a package company. And so I like work in the industry. I'm a member of the Teamsters Union. Got a local, so I was elected as a shop steward in my workplace, so I represent about 200 people, mostly in the grievance procedure or whatever, but obviously political issues come up a lot at work, so I'm kind of facing off with like any kind of political issues that come up with, and I also interact with a lot of commercial businesses, like receivers. I go to a lot of loading docks in a lot of workplaces and kind of it's interesting in my job because I get to interact with like hundreds of workplaces as well.
And for people who are not already familiar, can you just kind of give out the broad strokes of what is this thing that is called the Freedom Convoy or has various names?
Yeah, I mean, so in late January of 2022, a group which I think started out pretty small, a group of truckers from British Columbia, after the federal government of Canada decided that you would be required to be vaccinated to go into the United States. And so that would mean that their work would require a vaccination. They decided to organize a convoy to go to the capital city and protest until these vaccine mandates were lifted. And it was largely sold under this veil of being just about this one issue. And the more you look into it, you see that it is actually just a flagship for extreme far right activity. And as they've traveled across the country, it has kind of grown, and there's been more sympathy, largely from people of privilege that have identified with their personal and individual frustrations of vaccine mandates, many of which employers across Canada have on their own issued their own vaccine mandates, and as well as like various jurisdictions in certain industries, various levels of governments have mandated that you also need to be vaccinated to show up to work. So there's like some general sympathy for the frustration that you could see across the country for people to like get on board with it. And I mean, they've been in Ottawa now for just a little over a week.
Yeah, and obviously this is, I should say, a pretty rapidly developing situation. So I am hoping to put this out soon, but things could actually look very different, even in 2 or 3 days from now. I mean, I'm curious, is your workplace under a vaccine mandate? Are you required to be vaccinated to keep working your job?
Not yet. My employer really is likely to be more aligned with these convoy, and I mean, like it's you see that lots of businesses are in fact opposed to these because it just creates staffing issues and et cetera, and it's like it's just a safety barrier. So there's many employers that resist it right to the end and are aligned with this. And that's why this convoy, you see so much employer support, which I guess we could talk to more. It was like the funding and, but I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if my employer is actually lobbying to end this, but no, I don't have an employer issued vaccine mandate, but, because I'm federally regulated, the government of Canada has announced that they will be issuing a mandate for all federally regulated workers, which right now there's just certain sectors and industries that are, but no, my employer hasn't. In the announcement of the federal government planning on doing this, they have begun collecting vaccine data and have asked us to start submitting our vaccine status. But they're not, it has not become a condition of employment in my quite a large employer. It's not like Canada Post, it has, and Pure Later, it has, but mine hasn't.
Okay. And what about the Teamsters? I guess some people who are through the Teamsters are subject to this mandate. Has the union taken a position on this, or what's been their role in this question?
So my union has taken many of the workplaces that are represented by the Teamsters have issued their own, and they've said, like at union meetings, that this is a fight that is unwinnable. To kind of like we're not like brought in a bunch of legal opinions. In short, that like a vaccine mandate is viewed as a reasonable safety precaution, and it is the employer's responsibility to ensure a safe workplace. And so they're like, any arbitrator, if we wrote grievances about policy grievances about this, that it would just not be. So they have said we will not fight this on a policy level. However, anybody that is individually facing loss of employment because of their vaccine status, that like we will certainly explore like any sort of any sort of exemptions. Basically, the regular human rights code rules would apply in defense of somebody's job for not getting the vaccine, and that's just, as most people know, is quite a high standard for like not abiding by a safety rule. So they're just like, we'll help people individually, but like they actually, for people that work in the Teamsters Union, staff, organizers, executive board members, all that stuff, that they've issued their own, because they are an employer employing this union staff, they've issued their own vaccine mandate outside of any government provocation, and are demanding that all Teamsters staff be vaccinated. So I mean, I feel like that alone kind of clarifies their position. But also, the Teamsters are a trucker, like they're a trucking union. I mean, they represent lots of industries, but it's a trucking union historically, and represents a lot of people in the industry. And as far as the convoy goes, it is just beyond me why them and the Canadian Labor Congress and the labor movement in general has just been stone dead silent on this issue that is largely being painted, in what I believe to be incorrectly painted, as like a workers' rise up, which I just, regardless of what it is, how it's being perceived, is as a workers' thing. And the fact that they would just be silent, both physically and like, it's just like, I don't know, goes to show you where the labor movement is in Canada, that they would sit there and watch it happen.
But and I guess I maybe before we go further, do you want to like outline your own personal position on this question of vaccine mandates?
Yeah, I mean, I mean, like, I'm vaccinated, and like, I have seen, I mean, other than like what we read about like medical things happen, I mean, like, I've seen enough people get it in their households where some people are vaccinated or some people are not, and just encountered enough firsthand and secondhand information about the effectiveness of the vaccine. And I don't want to see people get sick and hurt, and this feels like a reasonable way to do that. So I'm not, like, I'm not mandates, however, I mean, I'm opposed to like state control over people's health choices, and I'm not, like, I'm not in favor of these mandates. But in the case of this convoy, it actually, in my own head, feels irrelevant on whether or not like we support the government doing something like that, because it really doesn't feel like what it's about.
Yeah, let's get to that. So I guess, for me, it's important in the to talk about the convoy in the context of these other far right efforts over the last, I don't know, 8 or 9 years, that we could call the Patriot Movement and the Yellow Vests and United We Roll. And I'm just wondering if you could give kind of a bit of a background to where all this is coming from and where they're getting their organizational support that's going on behind the scenes.
Yeah, I mean, like, I have a few thoughts and things in particular that I've been noticing over the past, what I would say, 5 years. I feel like 2017 was like a major shifting point in like nationalism being linked, like Canadian nationalism being like linked to this kind of like activism and regular protests that we see all the time, at least. And I mean, with like the Proud Boys like really starting to like grow their numbers at that time, and like Soldiers of Odin, and like them doing like lots of anti-immigration demonstrations, it's like that time in 2017. I mean, like, when we think about the Canadian flag and what it like has always meant, like, we know that it's a symbol of genocide. We know that it's like this like nationalist imagery that it's never been good, but it has like changed. Like, when I'm walking down the street now, more so than I would say 10 years ago, And I see a group of people on the street, and there's not anything big right wing going on. I see a group of people on the street with a bunch of Canadian flags. I'm like, those people are dangerous. Like, those people are like guaranteed there is going to be some serious like right wing people involved. Sorry, the dogs are barking. I
That's
don't know if
okay.
that's
Don't worry about it.
yeah. And so, I mean, just like this thing with the Canadian flags, it's like the embracing of nationalism in this new way. I feel like it does two things. It like makes it more inviting and soft to like general public or whatever, because it's like largely viewed as this like safe imagery for like people, like, drink Tim Hortons, play hockey,
Yeah.
bullshit lie people that have been telling themselves for 100 years. But like, I don't know, it's just this like it's just taken on a new, harsher meaning lately. And I feel like that that's happened, like with a lot of these right wing movements come together, and this just feels like just the largest amalgamation of this growth over the last 5 years that we've seen. Because I mean, we could go through the list of all of these organizations that have like developed in these like tiny little movements that like flare up for a year and then go down and then reemerge, with like it's like a different thing.
Yeah.
But you look at you're in your own city. You know how most Canadian cities, you've got like your city hall, like right wing whack jobs that are down there every Saturday, and it like will like go down and come back, but it's like the same people
Yeah.
doing it. It just seems to have like the convoy just like picked all of that up at once. And so it's going to be completely filled. Like, obviously, I believe that it's 100% possible that there's tons of people that are being duped into believing that this is simply a anti-vaccine mandate demonstration, and they're going to go and stand on a overpass and wave at the nice Canadian flag truckers. But like, that's not who's like picking, and that's like not who is like, setting up campers at Parliament. And I don't know. So I just feel like it's like a culmination of this like right wing activity.
Yeah, certainly like in the Kingston area, like every right wing person that we track because we consider them to be dangerous is 100% in Ottawa right now if they can be.
Yeah.
But I think it's important to acknowledge that there is a somewhat of a popular character to this thing, and I think we all know people who haven't, expressed far right politics or anything like that in the past who are interested in this movement or support it or even going to Ottawa. I know people who have gone to Ottawa who I wouldn't call right wing activists or members of the People's Party or something like that. What do you think it is about the imagery and strategy and current moment in this pandemic that is drawing so many people in?
I mean, I think that that's really the big question that a lot of us are trying to wrap our head around. I think that the timing, there was just like an alignment of political climate, and it just like doesn't, I don't know. It doesn't seem like there was some incredible organizing that like managed to do it. And like I've heard like lots of like liberals or even like socialists be like, look at what this convoy has like been able to accomplish. Like, they're beating us. Like, that kind of line that people get into about we need to like learn how to like be as good as they are. I really don't think that that's what's happening. I think that something was painted as a generic, innocent Canadian questioning of authority, and that the timing of like the exhaustion of the pandemic, that like there was like a number of people that were able to plug into it. But I mean, it's also like it's not that big, like when you think about it. I mean, it's not as big as like other things that we've seen. It's just like this romantic story of trucks traveling across the country because they supposedly can't work. But I mean, I think that it's also just been like blown up into this much larger thing than it actually is. But
Yeah, I think people have been talking about it as political theater to some extent, which I think is a good way to look at it as well, because trucks are really big and really loud and really hard to move, and this whole thing is really, at least in Ottawa, is really anchored by the presence of trucks all through the downtown. I went up there with some friends yesterday to check it out. And it is, it's powerful, right? Like, it's really loud. And there were like 5,000 people in the streets of Ottawa, which is pretty, like everywhere you go in Ottawa, there's people screaming their heads off, yelling freedom and waving Canada flags, not even in one sort of convergent location. They're just kind of feeling really energized. And I think you're right that kind of anybody who is tired of this pandemic, which is everybody, and doesn't mind rubbing shoulders with, right-wing nationalists, is being invited to this thing, and they're being kind of shown a good time when they go, which I think is actually making a big difference in the context of 2 years of social distancing and, shutdowns and all that kind of stuff. I think people are really finding something there, and they're feeling inspired by it, which is really concerning, knowing that this is, largely being run behind the scenes, and not even behind the scenes, almost up front by right-wing conspiracy theorists and racists.
It's definitely true. At City Hall just today, actually, was driving past, and there was maybe 30 people down there, and we kind of like went by, and they've got signs saying like mandated vaccine is mandated poison, and we kind of like blow by, and we look, and I do like a double take, and I'm like, oh, there he is, there's Paul Fromm. And
Right.
I don't know, I'm sure a number of people would know, but Paul Fromm is like a legendary white supremacist. Like, he is like the absolute scum of the earth. Like, he keeps trying to run for mayor of these cities in Canada. Municipal politics, like completely based off of anti-immigration policies, and like has like edited countless newspapers about just like these conspiracies about how like the white culture is being taken over. Like, these are like, so I mean, we see him down there, and it's like, okay, no surprise there. And go decide to take a look on Twitter, and he's on there posting, and he like refers to the truckers convoy as like us. And I mean, like, this is like the most like this is a man who's like hosted like a celebratory parties of like the legacy of like Ku Klux Klan. Like there's like no like mincing words on what type of white supremacist this is. So I mean, it's like, why these types of people grip onto this thing and claim it as their own is like clarity enough for me, like what these types of things are.
What do people in your like work world, in terms of truckers or other transportation workers, think about this?
I find it hard to find people that are supportive of it, which like surprise there's two people, and I work in a workplace of about 230, 240, depending on what time of year it is. But it's and obviously people keep their opinions to themselves, but like I interact with a lot of people, and people come to me when they have issues with like vaccine related issues. And there's only like a couple of people that are talking about this in my workplace, but I mean, largely I'm just interacting with people that when they bring it up, it's like they're just like largely referred to as like whiny babies, or just like a bunch of truckers throwing a tantrum because they don't care about anybody else other than themselves. And it's like you hear things like right to infect, and like I just largely have found that people are just like not, I'm not seeing this kind of representation that I see in the news on how big this thing is. Like, I just like don't encounter that. And or like receivers when you go in are doing large pickups and they're like stressed out because these like temper tantrum truckers are gonna like make all of their like, you know, all of their imports completely crash because they're not working. But I mean, of course, that never happened either because there's not actually that many trucks off the road. And I mean it's like a lot of that, but there's a couple people that like, I mean, for example, in my workplace, I'm always talking about contract negotiations and always talking about strike. And I feel like every workplace issue should always loop around to kind of reinvigorating that feeling of taking control and like making terms to like make your workplace better and exercising worker power, all of these things. So I'm always talking about it. That's just how I engage with this role. And this one of my right-wing coworkers or whatever starts being like, "Hey Dan, we should go to Ottawa this weekend," like before it happened. "Like we should go to Ottawa. Like you come to Ottawa with me after the ship. We're gonna take our package car there. We're gonna burn it on the steps of Parliament," or whatever it is. Like all talking, like all jazzed up about like wanting to go. He's just like so into this. Like we want to take, and I'm just like, dude, like get away from me. Like we're not on the same page about this at all. And I find it notable though that this one particular person is like, "Hey, I thought you were into this kind of stuff. Like I thought this is the kind of stuff you're into." So I mean, that's what I find like the most, is that people would just like generally confuse this with something that is like wildly different. And
Right. Because in some social media channels in particular, it's being framed as like working class resistance to establishment power or something.
yeah, and there's this like wider belief that like all collective action is like the same,
Right.
which is just something that you just, I don't know, we just have to like be more clear about how we're talking about things if that's happening then, I guess.
I mean, like, maybe that's a good segue to sort of comparisons that I wanted to talk about in terms of Occupy or the tactic of like temporary autonomous zones that we've seen in the US.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people are drawing these parallels because, you know, it's essentially an occupation of an area of the city that is prolonged and then sort of infused with big numbers on the weekends, but they're holding it down with infrastructure, and they have, you know, they have structures, they have supply chains of their own, they have like socializing areas with saunas now. So what is the connection here, and what is different from efforts in the past that anarchists have participated in, such as Occupy?
Probably like I mean definitely resources is a big part of it. I mean, when you have a large group of people that are coming from the middle class, I mean that like it seems to be like a lot of middle class folks, and I think that resources could have a lot to do with it, but I don't know, it's hard. I guess it would be like hard to say. There's definitely some things, even though I can't stand these people, that like when you're listening to liberals or like liberal city councillors in Ottawa talking about how this is affecting their lives, and I mean it does sound awful, but man, when I hear some of these city councillors talking about how annoyed they are by the noise and stuff like that, I mean that just gives me tons of pleasure. Because like that kind of stuff, I just find it absolutely hilarious. But I mean, maybe I'm partial to like people's lives being disrupted, and I think that that's like basically always a good thing for people to get torn out of their bubbles. But
Just for me, you know, going yesterday and looking at it, like the thing that really seems to be the biggest difference in other than the sort of knowing who the organizers are behind it and who's up on the stage, but also just like the symbolism of the the sea of Canadian flags, the Trump flags, the Gadsden flags, the Patriot flags, the Quebec Patriot flags. That, you know, kind of symbolism really makes it seem like it would be difficult for anarchists to actually sort of intervene in that space in any kind of effective way. It's almost like they're inoculated against it already.
Yeah, it really does. And I mean, it's like, yeah, it doesn't, like, for me, it doesn't feel like something that it's like we should be fighting for. Like, sometimes you hear a line that's like, oh, people have been misled or duped into this, and it's like the right intervention and the use of the, like, right words and the support of the right people would, like, redirect kind of this populist support into, like, something better or whatever. And it, but I mean, it almost just, like, it's just like, no, these people just do not care about how anybody else is affected by these things. And it's like, that's just where it's parked for now.
Wait a minute, Dad. Did you actually say freedom? Well, if you're dumb enough to vote, you're fucking dumb enough to believe them. Because if this country is so goddamn free that I can burn your fucking flag wherever I damn well please.
What about, like, what do you think about this growing series of attempts to portray themselves as in solidarity with Indigenous people, or you know, front and centering Indigenous people who have shown up to show support for the convoy, even though it's been full of really sad missteps along the way that have been highlighted by everyone. But I mean, I think this is a trend that we can track over the last few years, where these groups have really tried to build some kinds of alliances with some kinds of Indigenous people as part of this cause.
Yeah, I mean, that is something we've seen for a while, and like particularly like with the yellow vests, like the Islamophobia, always finding people, like whenever a person, an Indigenous or a person of color, is participating, they are very aggressively pushed to the front. And I mean, like, all kinds of people are going to show up to these things all the time, but this is like definitely just a response and a counter to being called racist. So it's like, I mean, I can't view, and like definitely my experience on the street with these exact same people has like always looked the same. And it's like, how can we be racist? Like, we have people of color here, so we can't be racist. And I actually feel like it is that simple.
Yeah, sometimes the simplest explanation is the best one.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a shield is really all that it is. But we know that it's not, like, we know that these industries are largely, at least in the cities, are largely truckers from South Asian descent, which is like not the faces that we're seeing representing this. I don't think that it's racist simply because the organizers are clearly white supremacists from the beginning of the convoy, because I feel like it's become something much more there. I feel that it's more racist because it's a collection of people defending their white privilege, and that, like, this is like much larger than just the vaccines. It's because people are fed up of their white culture being threatened by like any type of whatever liberalism and equity coming and entering into their, so they're like in defense of that, and that like it has become like a larger, like, stay out of my life, I'm protecting my culture. And so clinging on to this makes it simple, but it's like a full-blown, like, systemic protection of privilege and like wanting to see status quo of a racist Canada. And so that's why, like, that imagery is involved as well. So, I mean, I feel like it's more connected to that, and that's why it's racist.
That's a really interesting point that I hadn't thought about before, but like it does kind of make sense to me. And also the fact that people have been like so much of the narrative that I heard in Ottawa on through the speakers was like, we just want to go back to how everything was. And I know they're talking, on the surface about 2 years ago before the pandemic hit, like what people's lives were like. But it really sounded like, this kind of like white nostalgia thing. Like it almost sounded like the exact same talking point as that. And I'm not, maybe I'm a conspiracy theorist now, but it doesn't seem like that's a coincidence.
No. And I mean, that's something that I feel like, I don't know, as a cis white dude, other cis white dudes confide in you, and like the shit that like people like will just like randomly stop barking or like barking on about, like their weird fucking chauvinism, and that they feel like threatened as a man, and that like their whole fucking male identity is under threat because of like the fucking queer agenda or something, is just, it's like a little bit much. And I feel like that it does, people do plug into stuff because it is like a pretty, when they say like we want to go back, they don't want to go back to before COVID. They want to go back to like the beginning of Confederation.
Right. Yeah, and a thing that another thing that reminds me of is, like this whole thing is so focused on Justin Trudeau and being anti-Trudeau, and I am very anti-Trudeau. I hate Justin Trudeau, but I think that when certain white men that I know are talking about Justin Trudeau and why they hate him, it's like he's too effeminate, he's too pretty. Like there's definitely like a level of toxic masculinity that is sort of like a big part of that base appeal of that message. And so when I see somebody saying that, I always want to be like, sure, but like, can you explain to me why you feel that way? It's also a mix of him being like a trust fund baby and all this kind of stuff, which is very true. But it's sometimes really hard to disentangle those things.
Absolutely. And like him is just being the target for like so many people. And like, yeah, like, I mean, how often do you hear like homophobic related things that are directed towards? I mean, I cannot stand Justin Trudeau, but I mean, just like the image of, he like doesn't fit the traditional like masculine image that like a lot of these like privilege protectors are engaged with, that it's like it is like a launching pad for like intense homophobia. And
Sure, because they love Donald Trump and they did love Doug Ford, and those are two other trust fund babies that don't seem to signify the same things.
yeah, I think there's just a lot all coming together, and it just comes down to like the traditional like protection of white cis culture. And this is just a more populist, like the anti-vaccine mandate is just a more populist approach to like carry that whole burden and bring this all of these things together.
So I wanted to ask about like what kinds of responses seem possible or, strategically useful in this moment. And that doesn't just have to be about Ottawa specifically. I think this is something that we're going to see continue to spread across the country. And there has been a lot of writing about this recently because of a perceived sort of inaction. And I think part of that is that there's a lot of things happening behind the scenes. But what do you think are some ways that anarchists could engage with this situation?
I mean, as a bare minimum, talking about it for what it is, like with the people that you interact with. But I mean, as far as like an organized response, I don't know much about that, and like what would be the best way to do it. I mean, certainly like we saw in Toronto what has been happening in Toronto is a very different city than Ottawa. And I thought, like, we saw a very different counter response in Toronto than we did in Ottawa. And I mean, like, healthcare workers getting organized and coming out because Queen's Park is right by all of those hospitals on University, and like having like a ton of healthcare workers out who have been facing, like, any way you look at it, these people have been facing up with a lot of death related to the spread of COVID. And I mean, to just have that happening right in front of the hospitals, I mean, like, that is definitely, it's just stark. It's just stark for that to be happening there.
I think one of the sort of almost optical things that people are struggling with is that, at least in Ottawa, that the fascist groups that are participating in this thing are not wearing their hats with their logos on it. You know, like they're just wearing Canadian flags and blending into this bigger crowd. And so maybe it doesn't feel like a straightforward, like, anti-fascist situation. You know what I mean?
It is a lot more slippery.
Yeah, I'm not to say that there haven't been. I know Canada First is one of the groups that has been, you know, wearing their gear and trying to confront counter demonstrations and stuff. But for the most part, it's a bunch of people wrapped in Canadian flags.
Yeah. And I mean, like, it gets skirted or whatever too, but when I like see coworkers that drove out to Ottawa going, are all hyped up and participating for the reasons that, like, we talked about before or whatever, and talking to people, like, when questioned, I had one interaction, I was like, oh, so did you actually see the swastika flag? I was like, or was it like still there? I'm like, kind of like with a snarky tone, I'm like, you guys kicked them out though, right? Like, you kicked them out. And understanding where I'm getting with it, obviously my question gets like totally dismissed. But I mean, like, we've all seen these images, and we know that people are being a little bit more covert about their displays when participating in something like this. But I mean, they aren't really. I mean, I haven't heard any stories of white supremacists being removed from these things.
No, I think in a couple cases, people were quietly asked to take the Confederate flag off their truck or whatever, but they weren't asked to leave. Like, they're still fully welcome to participate. They're just supposed to participate in a particular PR strategy that's in play.
Yeah, absolutely.
What do you say to, like, I don't know too many people who think this, but there are people who think that anarchists should just show up and join the crowd and bring your own message and try to steer this towards, you know, like a popular left revolt or something like that.
Yeah, I don't have a lot of faith in taking these things and re-steering them. I think that showing up and being a visible opposing presence and being confrontational about it is likely to be more, like, the more uncomfortable it is, like, just like the classic anti-fascist stuff where it's like the more uncomfortable it is for these people to do what they're going to do, it's like it is actually less likely that people will want to participate, because it's not, you're not getting warm and fuzzies by going out there. You're going out there and you're going to get into a confrontation. And so, like, being that confrontation, I feel like is useful because becomes more difficult. But re-steering, like some folks might suggest, like, re-steering things is, I feel like, is a pretty tough thing to do.
Yeah, and then I mean, there's also the question of re-steering or whatever the counter demonstrations, because in the
Oh,
counter
yeah.
demonstrations we're seeing a lot of calls for police repression. You see, like, a lot of classist anti-trucker signage, like telling people that they can't wait for self-driving trucks or questioning people's literacy, or focusing, you know, purely on the disruption from the noise. Like, I saw a sign that said "Make Ottawa boring again." So, I mean,
oh, wonderful.
You know, being there, it's I almost didn't want to stand on either side of the street, you know, but I also yeah. am against, you know, being a purist and not getting our hands dirty. So, I mean, how do you think people can engage without being just lumped in with this pro-Trudeau liberal elitist kind of knee-jerk response that we see happening from some people?
I mean, this is just such a strange phenomenon that it's like hard to think about how to do it. I mean, like, we don't really have a whole lot of historical references, at least in like the last 20, 30 years, of things really quite ever looking like this and this type of nationalism organizing that's like they're taking a more like the PR strategy, like you were mentioning before, is just like very strategic. Like doing something, or like as anarchists responding to what is happening, it doesn't always mean physically showing up to the thing. I mean, continuing to carry those spaces and making sure that, like, because I mean, like, I absolutely cannot stand the liberal response to all of this, and I find that like the liberal response is sometimes more repulsive than what is actually happening. And like people's defense of status quo, it's just like, oh no, like you're this is far worse. And so I mean, like, some of those voices, I mean, it's just I don't want to be around like any of that. So like, I mean, like physically showing up to a lot of these things with the intention of like doing it is like might not be the best strategy, but like carrying those spaces independently that like where we have those voices that are like opposed to both of these like extremely oppressive and repressive like noises is like definitely I feel stronger than showing up sometimes.
Do you think there are tactical lessons that we could draw from what's happening right now for future actions of our own?
Yeah, probably. I think that there's lessons to be drawn from any type of like large thing that is happening like this. I mean, the response of the police is fascinating. I mean, like, they are just really, really like slow pitching. I don't know if you, when you were there, what was the police presence like when you were there?
They were around, walking in groups of 15 or 20, but not interacting with people at all. They were just like, I think when they say at the police services board in Ottawa that the police have basically ceded control of the downtown to the occupation, I think that's actually true. And that, yeah. You know, I think the thing that's true is that the police could initiate a confrontation, but they're not sure that they will win or that they will not make the situation worse. And I think that's also true without calling in a lot more police from other jurisdictions. I don't think they, at least on the weekend when the crowd swells, even though it's sort of a party like vibe in the streets for the most part, I think there's a lot of people itching for a fight in that crowd and would be willing to fight back if the police try to break things up. So yeah, I think they're trying to appease the residents of Ottawa who are upset by showing some kind of presence. And I know just as tonight they've declared a state of emergency, which I seems more like a flex than a strategy to me. But again, I think right. They're just trying to look like they're doing something, but they're also afraid to actually attack this thing.
Yeah, calling for an official state of emergency can give them access to different types of funding or make certain types of requests that would not be able to be made without that declaration and legal implications. I feel like that there's municipal strategy.
It's hard to say because they basically, you know, gave them the city and have done almost nothing, which is obviously what a lot of liberals in Ottawa are very upset about, is that they haven't really, they basically have been not enforcing any bylaws. They're only focusing on criminal activity and certain silly objects of public outrage, like people who put a flag on the Terry Fox statue or something like that. But it really seems more like a PR exercise than a police enforcement exercise up until this point.
Yeah, it really does.
I guess, you know, my last question, and I'm curious if you have anything else to add too, is just if, I don't think it's that likely, but if this did escalate in this current cycle into a level of actual civil unrest, like how can we prepare for that situation now, knowing what we know right now?
I don't really know how we would respond to that. I mean, it's hard to gauge what people's response would be like if they brought in the military and like if it turned into this like explosive thing. But I mean, it would be really, really surprising to me if the police did that, because it feels like they're far more likely to be aligned with what is happening on the streets of Ottawa. It just it doesn't make sense to me that there would be like a war between the police and these protesters, because even the people that I interact with directly that went there on the first weekend, it was like one thing that people would talk about all the time was one, how positive this thing was. Everybody was so great, right? Like all the white people are just like really, really like happy and treating each other like really great. And then two, I heard multiple times people talking about how great the police were.
Right.
And, you know, everybody's taking selfies with the cops, interacting. The cops are super chill, telling them that they support it. It's like, it's just like can't be compared to anything that is like actual resistance to the state, like other than like a political like faction of it. It's like this, it like is effectively the state, just not the Liberal Party.
Yeah. Yeah. One thing that's kind of shocking to me is that almost the most militant voice in this whole situation is like a politician, Randy Hillier, who has been posting images of like warheads and stuff and talking about Vimy Ridge, but that's not actually the tone of the, yeah, the thing is very much celebrating its supposed nonviolence despite all the incidents of like street harassment and intimidation that's been happening to people for wearing masks and stuff like that. So are there other thoughts you had that you wanted to put into the interview?
I mean, I also just wanted to add, I mean, like there is like a like other groups of truckers organizing across the city that are just not plugged into and not engaging at all with like what these groups of so-called truckers are doing. And like the Najawan Support Network in Brampton, just outside of Toronto, is a group of largely Punjabi truckers, and it is a massive organization that has come together like really quickly in the city, and they largely do like wage theft supports and supports of like students and people seeking permanent residencies and people working in the transportation industry that on work permits and are getting their like wages stolen. So this is like a really intense collective like organization that is just like strictly exists to like confront their employers, and like their position on this whole thing is that this is just bringing down all of the, like, it's like undercutting all of the work that they're doing to actually make a lot of vulnerable transportation workers' lives better. It's bringing it down and just like creating this large distraction in the industry as like the primary issue. I mean says quite a bit mm-hmm. for me. And I've been to a number of their demos, and it is like it's powerful stuff, the way that they put everything on the line and confront their bosses. I mean, it's just, this is not like, I just think that we should not be confusing it with like, these are actually truckers' voices. I think that there's some trucks involved, absolutely, but it's like truckers are not, it's not like a bearded white man in a dirty t-shirt. This is like that's not what a trucker looks like in Canada. And I just think that it's important that we like keep in mind who truckers are in Canada, and it's like definitely not a bunch of white anti-vaxxers.
I was thinking about how Elon Musk tweeted his support for the quote-unquote Canadian truckers, and I just was thinking about how ironic that is, given that his company is developing self-driving trucks that will probably put everyone out of business in 10 years if there's not a huge struggle over it.
It speaks so much measures when we see the employing class supporting like something like this happening. Another thing is the GoFundMe page and the funding. I mean, like, there's lots of probably speculating and questions that we could ask about where that money came from and how it was raised so quickly, and that, like, we can't do that, et cetera, et cetera. But I mean, if you go on the GoFundMe page itself and you look at the donors, and you know how they're listed, a lot of them are anonymous, but if you can actually sort them by, like, who donated the most and just view the, like, top. And when you look through, it's like all like established businesses, like these are like fully businesses, and you look and it's like Mike's Plumbing, like $30,000, like Jerry's Rigging, $30,000, like all of these like businesses just over and over donating like these five figure amounts. And it's like, so you have like Federation of Employers, Elon Musk, and then all of these small businesses that are funding this thing. It's just like, it just speaks volume to what it actually is.
And the Trump machine notably is very much throwing their weight behind this as well, and Joe Rogan too. And it makes sense to me that businesses are funding this thing, because the anti-lockdown movement, which is the kind of direct precedent for this, was, you know, mainly representing the interests of like entrepreneurial freedom, because the so-called lockdowns were, you know, primarily affected businesses who had to either close or operate with restrictions or reduced capacities, that movement was, you know, mainly a movement of small business owners and their supporters, and represented those material interests. So it kind of makes sense that this would be a continuation of that.
100%, 100%.
Well, that's it for now for this episode of From Embers. We're obviously going to continue to track this movement and the growth of right-wing street activity in general in this country, and continue to talk about it. If you have any feedback or episode ideas, definitely hit us up at fromembers@riseup.net. Thanks for listening, tell your friends, and we'll be back soon with more content.
I'm going to make those pompous academics regret kicking out such a genius. Deciding to build my lab and do my research.
The Time Talks Podcast.
Have you ever stared at a 500-page book and wish you could just talk to the author about their ideas instead? If so, the Time Talks Podcast, part of the Channel Zero Network, is for you, where we discuss history, politics, music, and art with an anti-authoritarian and anarchist perspective.
The Time Talks Podcast.
What's this light? Feel different.
The Time Talks Podcast.
CKUT
Radio.
Radio.
Sound waves in the air.
CKUT.
Montreal, Canada.
CKUT.
To make an appointment for your booster dose against COVID-19, visit quebec.ca/COVID-vaccine to follow the vaccination sequence plan for your area and book your appointment online. To continue protecting yourself against COVID-19 and its variants, get a booster dose and keep following distancing measures, wearing a mask, and washing your hands. The booster dose, the best way to stay protected longer. A message from the Gouvernement du Québec.
The Prison Radio Show is a twice-monthly news show on CKUT. The show seeks to confront the invisibility of prisons and prisoner struggles by focusing on the roots of incarceration, policing, and criminalization, and by challenging ideas about what prisons are and who ends up inside. We are dedicated to programming that is directly collaborative with people who are currently incarcerated. With that in mind, we would like to let you know that we have a phone line for prisoners and their outside supporters. In fact, we have two phone lines. You can call us Collect from Bordeaux Prison and Riviere de Prairie Prison by calling 514-876-3748. We also have a number for non-collect calls. That number is 438-337-8423. Feel free to call that number and leave a message for us with news to share on the show or an audio message for your loved ones inside.
Good afternoon. You're tuned to Butcher T's Noontime Cuts, hitting every Friday from noon to 2, playing your wide variety of music just to make your afternoon delight just right. So stay locked to the CKT 90.3 FM.
About you all the time. Now I'm looking in.